Let's ask the man who has spent the last 3 years of his life defending this man, Nader Hassan, criminal and constitutional lawyer and partner with Stockwoods LLP. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Boy, looking at the last 3 years, kind of looking through a rearview mirror, as you walk out of that courtroom yesterday, a totally different mindset. What goes through your mind in the last few hours?
I mean, it was just immense relief. We'd been living with this case for the last 3 years. It had been all-consuming for the last little while. But the stress and the pressure that we were feeling was not even just a scintilla of what Omar and his family have been feeling after the last 3 years. I just want to be very clear for your listeners, Alex, about one thing. Mr. Zamir is not out there celebrating. He continues to feel awful about what had happened. He knows that a man died underneath the weight of his vehicle, a vehicle he was driving, and he feels awful about that. He feels a wave of relief for not having been unjustly imprisoned for a crime he did not commit, but he continues to feel awful for the family of the fallen police officer.
Yeah, there is no win here. No question about it. The reality is, though, when you are accused of killing anybody, but especially a police officer, it goes into its own category. And in those days after, it was a huge headline and lots of questions of who is this person? Who could have done this? And it's always very emotional, as you well know. But even when we got to the point of the bail hearing and the judge in that proceeding, Justice Copeland, made the ruling that he would get bail, and you know what happened next. It was a lot of outrage, a lot of questions. I questioned, how on earth do you get first degree bail on a first degree involving a cop? And again, she made the point that it'll make sense once the trial comes. And I'm thinking, in looking back at all the evidence or lack thereof, I don't even know how this case got to trial on a first degree murder charge, because even then, back then, she said, it's a weak case, but we couldn't say anything because of the publication ban. So my question is, how did this charge come to be, and why wasn't it a lesser charge?
Well, you said something really insightful just a few moments ago. When it's a police officer who's a victim, it's its whole category of case. And that's true in multiple ways. Firstly, it automatically elevates murder to first degree murder if the victim is a police officer and there is evidence to suggest that the accused knew that the victim was a police officer. Okay, so that's one thing. And then the other part of it is that there is a culture within the police forces and within the Crown Attorney's Office to take a completely different approach when the victim is a police officer. Well, some might say tunnel vision is the approach. And what you had here was the police laid the charge, and I'm not going to quarrel with what the motivation was at that time, but at a minimum, once they saw their own expert report, their own accident reconstructionist expert report, at that moment, they should have realized that the three eyewitness police officers on whose testimony they were relying to sustain a first degree murder charge, they should have realized at that time that those three officers were lying, because if you had followed this trial closely, you would have known that what our accident reconstructionist was saying and what the Crown's accident reconstructionist was saying happened, they weren't very far apart at all. Yeah. There was a lot of overlap. And, a lot of cases you have dueling experts. Crown says one thing, a defense expert says another thing, and the jury's got to sort it out. They didn't have to sort out the expert evidence here. It was almost exactly the same. And so that's the time at which the police and the Crown should have said, okay, we have overcharged here. This is not a murder. This is an accident.
Yeah. Again, if they'd gone with manslaughter, maybe you can get to that threshold. But here we are now. There's been an acquittal. Some interesting, the other thing is, I thought the first time I had heard that, they were new to Canada in 2019, they didn't realize that they were undercover officers. I thought, oh boy, the the jury's going to have a tough time on this one because it's very believable that someone wouldn't realize that they are police officers, because I don't think I would even know. And I mean, maybe because I do what I do, I would. But it's very believable that someone wouldn't know what was going on and be frightened by that. But the other thing that the Justice Malloy said, she's very direct, is saying to the jury, if you know you think there was collusion here, you can come to that decision. What happens now? Clearly, there's going to be some decisions made. I don't know if there's going to be some kind of review on this on the side of the police. But is there any kind of next steps for you and your client? Any kind of civil action? Any kind of demand for inquiry? Anything like that?
Yeah, I mean that is something we're going to have to talk about. I'm not going to rule anything out yet, but that's a conversation I'm going to have with Omar and his family about what the next steps are. I didn't want to talk with them about that yesterday. I told Omar, you know, you got to go home now and go hug your kids.
Yeah.
He has his two youngest. He hasn't hugged them once in his life yet, or their lives yet, without the sword of this prosecution hanging over his head. Both of those kids were born while this case was pending. So he had to go home and do that. And I want him to enjoy life a little bit. There will be time to talk about what the next steps are, but I don't think the police and the administration of justice should be waiting for us. I think they can do some soul searching, whether or not we do anything. They need to do some soul searching about some of the decisions that were made in the course of this investigation and this prosecution.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. There's lots to pick away on this. But to your client, you know, in particular, and again, I say this knowing that Constable Northrop, his family's got nothing here. You know, he's gone, he's dead, he's not coming back, and they will have to live with that. That is the uncruel truth for them. Your client, though, has lived pretty much his whole existence in this country accused of killing a police officer, and could very well be part of a process moving forward should there be one. That's a tough way to start a new life in this country.
Yeah, it is. But he's an admirable, resilient person. You know, you played a clip at the beginning of the show about him thanking Canada. You made reference to that. You know, that wasn't scripted at all. I had no idea what he was going to say. That's the kind of person he is. He doesn't bear any ill will towards anyone. I'll tell you, the very first day I met him in the detention center after he'd been arrested for this, his first question to me wasn't, you know, can you get me bail? How are you going to defend this case? His first question for me was, how is the family of that poor man doing? Do you know? I just feel awful about what has happened.
Yeah.
And he continues to feel awful about what has happened. He's going to live with that. But he's a resilient person. He's a good person. And so, you know, we're lucky to have him here in Canada. And I'm glad he picked Canada. And I wish his first few years in this country had been better than what he's had to endure. But he and his family are wonderful people, and I expect they'll persevere.
A GoFundMe has been set up, and certainly will help with him getting on his feet. How can people help?
Well, you know, they you know, we do our best to try to cut rate and make it possible for people to get a full and proper defense when they are facing a situation like this one, but they want to repay some of their debts, and they want to get back on their feet. So they have this GoFundMe campaign that's ongoing, and anyone who reaches out to me directly can get the link to that. And then also, you know, what they appreciate are the words of support coming from Canadians across the country. And whenever someone sends me those words of support, I pass it on to the family, because it really has been a 180-degree turn. You know, you made reference to the time of the bail hearing. We were getting a lot of hate mail, even some death threats for even having the audacity to take on this case. Now we're getting messages from Canadians across the country saying, hey, how can we contribute to the Legal Defense Fund? And the difference between then and now is that Canadians now know the truth. And I'm grateful we have a free media and a media that reports on these types of cases fairly and objectively. And that's allowed Canadians to see the light.
Well, I appreciate your time on this, and we'll certainly follow next steps. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.